Now, what exactly do I mean by an unwritten language rule? It turns out that most of what we know about our native language is actually unwritten. We naturally begin picking up language from birth, actually even before, and we don't need any books to tell us what to do. Consider, for example, a very basic English sentence like, "I see the red house." Did we ever have to learn in school that the article "the" comes before the adjective "red" and that the adjective "red" comes before the noun "house"? No. No native speaker ever accidentally says things like, "I see the house red," or "I see red house the." So we don't need any written rules to teach us about word order in English. But there are rules. Otherwise, anything would go, and we would get all kinds of crazy word orders. But we don't. We begin to notice the unwritten rules of language when we study a non-native language with different rules. For example, when I learned Spanish, I had to learn to put adjectives like red, roja, after nouns like house, casa, not before. So, la casa roja, literally, the house red, not la roja casa, the red house, like it would be in English. And non-standard dialects have unwritten rules, too. Many of these are the same as the standard rules. All English speakers say the red house, and no one says the house red, but some are different. Let's take a few minutes to think about a dialect rule in detail. Let's begin by listening to a speaker of one particularly well-known dialect of American English, and actually a pretty well-known speaker himself, John F. Kennedy, the 35th President of the United States. You may also know where he was originally from, Boston.
We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom, symbolizing an end as well as a beginning, signifying renewal as well as change. For I have sworn before you and Almighty God the same solemn oath our forebears prescribed nearly a century and three quarters ago.
I'm sure you noticed one of President Kennedy's most prominent dialect features, the dropping of R's in words like potty for party and forebears for forebears. Linguists refer to R-dropping dialects like Boston English as R-less or non-rhotic. This contrasts with the majority of American English dialects, which are R-pronouncing, rhotic, or R-ful. No, not awful, though some Brits think American R-pronunciations are pretty terrible. R-lessness is also sometimes referred to as R-vocalization. This is because, technically speaking, R's are not completely dropped, but pronounced more like vowels. In other words, they're vowelified or vocalized. The upshot is that President Kennedy has a non-rhotic dialect, a dialect in which R's are typically not fully pronounced. But notice I said typically. Did you also notice that sometimes Kennedy doesn't drop his R's? He doesn't say feedum for freedom, renewal for renewal, or prescribed for prescribed. So R dropping is variable, but is it haphazard? After all, Boston English isn't standard English, so what would we expect? Let's investigate by systematically listing out the words where President Kennedy drops his R's and where he pronounces them. If you have a piece of paper handy, make two columns, one for R dropping and one for R pronouncing. Let's listen to President Kennedy again. I know this is a great speech, but try to focus on how he pronounces or doesn't pronounce his R's, not so much on what he's saying.
We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom, symbolizing an end as well as a beginning, signifying renewal as well as change. For I have sworn before you and Almighty God the same solemn oath our forebears prescribed nearly a century and three quarters ago. The world is very different now, for man holds in his mortal hand the power to abolish all forms of human poverty and all forms of human life. And yet the same revolutionary beliefs for which our forebears fought are still at issue around the globe. The belief that the rights of man come not from the generosity of the state, but from the hand of God.
So, in the R dropping column, you can put down words like potty, swan for sworn, and forebears, among others. You can also put down power, forms, and poverty. In the R pronouncing column, we have words like celebration, freedom, and renewal, and also revolutionary, around, and rights. Do you see a pattern? It turns out that R dropping in Boston English is not erratic after all. It follows a pattern, a rule. There are two parts to this rule. Part one, R can be dropped when it occurs word finally, after a vowel, or between a vowel and a consonant. So it can be dropped in power for power, sworn for sworn, and potty for party. Part two, R cannot be dropped when it occurs word initially, after a consonant, or between vowels. And so renewal, freedom, and around. Now, if you were to go back and listen to President Kennedy's speech more closely, you'd notice that part one of the R dropping rule is optional. He doesn't always drop R at the ends of words or between vowels and consonants. So sometimes he says for and sometimes for, and he also says world and mortal, not world or mortal. But part two of the rule is an absolute. R is never dropped in Boston English at the beginning of a word or after a consonant, no matter how R-less the speaker might be. So this is a rule. It sets out where R dropping is allowed and where it's prohibited. This is just like the standard English rule that tells us that prepositions are all well and good, but there's something we should never end a sentence with. With which we should never end a sentence. So R-lessness is governed by an unconscious rule. And this rule holds not just for prominent political figures like JFK, but for all speakers of R-less Boston area dialects, whether or not they can even tell us what consonants and vowels are. All right. If all dialects have rules, and all dialects are equally valid, linguistically speaking, why are some language varieties called dialects and some called languages? Well, just like the difference between a standard dialect and a non-standard one, or between a quaint dialect and a terrible one, the reasons are almost purely social and political, not linguistic at all. There's no set linguistic dividing line between what counts as a dialect of a language and what counts as a language in and of itself.